Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
With Ring cameras, you can protect your home from anywhere. You're at baggage claim, and you get a motion alert. Check live view and see a guy looking in your car window. Luckily, you've got floodlight cam. So you press the siren button and let 105 decibels do the rest. Problem solved. Home protected. Bag on its way. With Ring, you can protect your home from anywhere. Learn more at ring.com.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
Here's the intro and the sound effects.
Oh, so that mic does work. I've just seen the red light on this whole time.
Yeah, it's weird. It's been stuck on. It's trippy.
All right, boys, let's roll. I got to go paint a floor after this.
All right, go to the friggin' gym. Oh.
You got to go see your boy who must not be named.
You guys both, either one of those would have been good times to start the intro, but neither one of you had your cans on, so.
Oh, that's all good.
Oh, just start it out.
Good day. You are listening to a podcast, but this isn't just any podcast. Just any podcast couldn't do this. Or this. What the? This is the podcast starring the Ted's. Starring the Ted Smith and Cobb. Ha-ha! The podcast starts. You better wear a helmet now.
Woo! The podcast, episode 233. What's up with your boy, the Ted Smith? I'll be the host of this here podcast, greatest podcast in all the land.
All the land.
To the right of me is my good buddy, my burner buddy. He's always here unless he's somewhere in Asia, somewhere in Southeast Asia on two wheels. He goes by the name of Cobb. Cobb, what's going on?
The Nikkei rose today while domestic markets tumbled amidst concern of a federal rate hike in December. Oil slid lower as overseas production increased, and the Shah of Iran has threatened sanctions against other oil-producing countries. Shares of the podcast ended a four-day slide as Ted and Cobb rallied markets by having a couple cocktails at the Art Walk. Will drinking in public continue to boost shares, or is it time to double down on shaking hands and kissing babies? We'll find out at 10.
All right, back down the wheels of steel, getting the studio set up and having a very nice apple sliced up for us. Matt Cowan, the producer. MCTP, what's up, Matt?
Hey, Ted.
As long as it's in the Crisp family. I like how we're all rolling with apples today.
Can you say the name of that one again?
Fire Crisp.
Okay. So what's the origin of that apple?
No idea. Actually, I didn't even go to the farmer's market this weekend. I was busy. Thank you to my beautiful girlfriend, Tyler, for picking those up.
The word word on the street is that there is a Cosmic Crisp.
What?
I've had the Cosmic Crisp.
Okay, so that's the... wait, what?
Yeah.
Are you sure?
That's a fun name, too.
I believe that apple has not been publicly released yet. Is
Are
that
you
your
sure?
little NZT-127? Okay, according to my dad, who just, you know, I'm not putting out credentials, but he does have an apple tree that has seven different varieties on it. Check today. Chehalis is one of them. There's some weird ones on there. But according to my dad, Cosmic... Oh, no, that's right. He said... Okay. I'm sorry. He said that the Cosmic Crisp is the first of a series of apples released by Wazoo, and it either came out last year or is about to come out. He wasn't sure. You can buy trees, $39.95 if you'd like to get one for your yard. But then there's also, he thought with the spice you were talking about, what is technically a crab apple called the WSU Luger Crisp. No, Luger Spice. Is that possible?
What?
Yes.
That's Fire Crisp.
Fire Crisp.
That's what the guy said at the farmer's market.
Yep. I feel like he's doing what weed dealers do, where they hype you on something that's not real.
That's what I'm saying, man. It's like when you go to the weed shops and don't even know what's what.
If anybody knows out there, let us know, because now I'm confused. Like I told you, I was supposed to bring a big apple in from my dad's tree I left in my car.
And let's be real. It's fun to talk about, but the Fire Crisp tastes A lot like a Honeycrisp.
Yeah, I don't know that I could tell the difference.
But it's
it
got
tastes
that
like
fire.
A fresh in-season Honeycrisp.
But like a little more fire, though.
But yeah, it's fun to say. Oh, no, dude, it's Firecrisp.
We were talking about apples last time. So then I feel like I need to mention at this point, Bacon, who emails the show often, is a black man. I'm going to put that out there. Bacon is black. Well, no, apples were a huge part of the last show. So I want to make sure I got a couple personal text messages. A phone call to my brother, and he was like, "Who's that Bacon dude trying to start a KKK meeting on your podcast?"
Oh yeah, when he was talking about like up here with you guys,
right? And like white culture, like I knew, like it kind of scared me at first because he's like, I just don't think it's a good idea to walk up to a group of black people and tell them you prefer white culture over black culture. Yeah. I don't know, Bacon. I gotta be honest with you, man. That last email, dude, you opened up a whole can of worms that I don't want to even step into. But then much less, I'm not going to step into a black male talking to, or a black person, sorry, doesn't have to be male, but a black person talking to another black person about culture and white culture as a white person. I was like, that's none of my business.
So how do you like them apples?
Yeah. So when my brother called me and was like, I was like, yeah, that dude's black. And he was like, oh,
it totally changes the conversation. And then we got a couple emails about it, too.
Yeah, and then we have another mutual friend that texted me, too, and was like, dude, what the F?
Yeah, what are you guys doing?
And I was like, he's blessed. So I just wanted to start this podcast by saying Bacon is a black person.
Yeah, I mean, dude, that, like, I don't want to do the classic thing of, like I have a black friend, but the reality is, if people don't know, you grew up in literally the blackest county in America. My roommate all through college was a black dude. Like, I don't know what it sounded like, but yeah.
Yeah. Right. it's hilarious. Not the image like, right. Like, like the white supremacist, whatever, like need not apply here. Yeah. Like at this point, really, like if you're sitting in your car and you're down with white, like you can go ahead and turn us off.
Yeah.
Like I don't mind losing. That's what I say. If I my line in the sand is punching Nazis, that you judge me for being okay with that, judge away.
Yeah, dude, also just, you know, like group identification and ideologies in general. Like there's no group of people that I hate. You know what I mean? Like it would have to be some individual and their actions rather than like a collective, like, oh, I hate all of like this group by, you know, race, gender, religion, whatever. Like, it's just too tough to paint with that wide of a brush. Plus, the world doesn't need that much hate.
No. The only time I think I use the term hate in a group that big is just sports.
Yeah, I was about to say, except the Timbers fans. Because honestly, they can F themselves.
Right. So it's like, it's fair to say, like, I hate Timbers fans or like... Like somebody, I read a meme once that was like, you know what's great about college football? It gives you a reason to unnecessarily just hate another state. Right? Yeah. It's some of the stuff like goes back to like a historical kind of stuff, but a lot of it's just nonsense.
Well, it's always us versus them, you know?
Yeah.
Although I will say this. One, I love that story about the Ohio State football coach who ran out of gas in Michigan and pushed his car a mile over the border because he didn't want to support their economy. Yeah. True story.
Well... And Michigan and Ohio, too, like, they had some legit stuff go on there.
Really?
Yeah.
Like what?
Wasn't there, like, a battle fought in Toledo or something?
I don't know, but yeah, Toledo's right kind of on that corner.
Yeah.
Ohio.
So I think, I can't remember if it was Civil War stuff. There was definitely some issue over borders or something. Same thing happened with Kansas. That's why Kansas and who else were rivals for a while? Because, like, there was, like, bleeding Kansas. There was
Nebraska?
Like,
I don't know.
No.
You're talking about the Jayhawks?
Yeah, but there was like legit kind of stuff to go back to why Kansas had this issue with this other state.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because I know Kansas State, they hate each other. Dude.
Yeah, any in-state rivalry you're going to hate.
Yeah. Well, you always have, okay, I feel like you're known for not taking sides in rivalries.
Which way?
I.e. UW, Wazoo.
Okay.
You like them both. Am I wrong?
No, I do like them.
So here's my question for you.
It depends on who I'm who with.
I want you today right here to take a stand on Ohio State, Michigan.
Oh, easy. Michigan.
Go Buckeyes, baby.
Really?
Yeah, dude. I have three roommates from Ohio.
Number one, I've been to Michigan to see a game. But number two is I have a journal. And this one entry has to be back to like 2006. And as I'm writing it, I guess I'm watching an Ohio State game. But I said, I don't know why, but I hate Ohio State. And I underlined hate two times. So, I mean, I don't know.
Two times.
Two times.
Dude, I'll say this.
So I can't explain it to you, but I've always kind of hated Ohio State. That's an easy one.
Unquestionably, Michigan has better academics, probably better people, but I still pull Ohio State.
Yeah, and I'm sure if I went to tailgate there, I'd be all about it.
Oh, dude, yeah, Columbus is awesome. It's all they've got. Well, those are the best college towns.
Right, I was going to say Ann Arbor was a pretty fun place to tailgate.
Yeah, I bet. I bet those
tailgate on the golf course.
Yeah, and like Michigan's cool too because they have like, you know, all the hunting and stuff. Like, and there's a lot of militias in Michigan. But like, what's Ohio really known for? Actually, the Natty is cool too. You know what? No, I'm sticking with the Buckeyes for sure.
Matt, where are you at?
I had a great time in Ohio.
All right.
The shoe, baby.
Come yeah, on. When I went, I didn't go to Ohio State or Columbus. I just went to Cleveland and where the... Hartville, way outside Cleveland, like an hour or something. But I had a good time in Ohio. I've never been to Michigan, so I guess I'm on Ohio State now. But
nice.
Never really picked a side. I had the most intense like experience of sports hate that I've had in a long time. Did either of you guys watch the women's final of the U.S. Open?
I did not, but I've read plenty about it.
So... regardless of what you think about Serena Williams' actions, that umpire just seemed like a smug douchebag. And he really, I always hate refs for whatever reason. And he was just being a dick. And so Serena was not being the best sport, but I could, if she was genuinely confused and like she's genuinely pissed that he's calling her integrity into question by accusing her of cheating, even though it looked like the guy was definitely coaching from the stands.
Coach admitted
it. He admitted it, yeah. So he also admitted it after.
Right. Now, whether or not she saw it is another issue, but right, it's kind of tough for her.
If her coach is doing that, like,
and he admitted to it.
Right. Then she lied when she's like, I never would do that to the ump. But what pissed me off, and I geared most of my hatred towards the umpire there. I didn't fully agree with the way Serena handled it, but I was so pissed at that ump for making such a controversial call on giving the one of those games to Naomi. And then, like, it totally stole her moment. Cobb, if you don't know, this girl was, like, 20, and her first time in a Grand Slam final playing against her idol, Serena Williams, and, like, controversy with the ump basically hands her a game and a point. And when she wins, as they're up on the podium, the entire arena is booing. And
yeah.
Like Serena
heard
had
about
to
the booing. I didn't know that it was the other girl's first time up there. Here's the thing. Why are you not allowed to coach during the game?
It's just part of the rules of tennis.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay. But I don't think it's an umpire. Is it a judge? A line judge?
Yeah.
The
umpire. Because she called for the referee who was like some old guy that came out from the side.
And so the controversy was what? He called her over and is like, hey, you're getting coached from the stands?
Correct.
And
which, again, here's the issue. I like Serena Williams. Serena Williams is a great athlete, one of the greatest athletes of I don't know how long. And she handles everything, in my mind, very well. Like the sexism stuff, the racism stuff, she handles everything awesome. She kind of lost it on this one. So, but also in her defense, the coach was coaching her, but I really, like, to this, like, I don't think she saw him. But, so I get where Matt's kind of saying, it's like, right, like, is it worth it to make that call and that thing?
And that's such, like, a high-stakes thing to be giving a game penalty. Yeah, and I just felt like, I don't know enough about tennis or particularly care. I just felt so bad for Naomi Osaka up there, like... she just won a fucking major Grand Slam, as they call it, right? It's a Grand Slam title, but the U.S. Open against Serena Williams. Like, she's 20. She watched Serena Williams, like, you know, take over the world.
Yeah.
And idolized her and beat her and, like, played better than her. I think she would have beat her without the umpire giving her an extra game and point. So I just felt bad for her, and I was just, like, sitting there. Yeah, really, really upset.
But would you feel worse, though, if he didn't call the game by the rules which were set forth and then she ended up losing? Because he also didn't know that she was going to get booed off the podium, right? His job is to call it as he sees and call by the rules. I don't know. I don't know anything about this controversy except what you guys have told me. But it seems like, you know, that's what he's there for, right? Is to keep people from being coached from the stands.
Yeah, but there's certain times where referees in any sport, like, you don't need to make yourself a part of the game.
Yeah, when they decide the game.
Sometimes they do. Right. So, I mean, that was kind of the point on this one. Like, technically, that guy was kind of throwing signals, but Serena wasn't looking. So then, right.
Was there a warning or anything?
And allegedly, that happens all the time, and everyone does it, and they never call it.
Right.
Well,
so
that's not an excuse, though.
There's a holding on every play of the NFL.
Exactly. You can call holding on every single play in the NFL. They just don't. You know what I mean? It's like when turning a double play at second base. Like, that guy's not going to touch the bag. Like, you just kind of give him the out. So that's what we're saying. Like, it seemed like he inserted himself in to make. And this happens a lot with Serena. Because in the French Open, she had all these, blood clots and stuff. So she wore a one-piece bodysuit. And then they were like, that's disrespectful to the game and this and that. And like, well, a ton of other people have done it. And then the U.S. Open looked sexist as hell earlier in the tournament because a woman had her shirt on backwards. So she took it off and put it back on. And they hit her with a penalty because, like, you took your shirt off. Whereas, like, the dudes sit out there on the hot days with their shirts off all the time.
What did they expect her to do?
Right. So that's what I'm saying. Like, these judges and these refs of this in tennis have been looking kind of bad.
All
so,
of this was boiling up to that. And I don't pay a ton of attention. I just heard my mom was like, oh, some crazy stuff's happening because she'd already seen it or heard about it online. And we were watching it delayed after dinner. Exactly. When the refs insert themselves into the game unnecessarily, it's happened enough times with sports that I follow a lot more and teams that I care about a lot more that I just have a natural, like, opposition to that, and I don't like it. And then because that's what caused the Naomi's moment to be tainted by all these boos of people booing the ump, it just made me sad, and I was like, man, f*** that guy. So
why the word unnecessarily? That's the part I don't understand. You said he inserted himself into the game, enforcing the rules for which he was there for. Where's the word unnecessarily come from?
Because we just explained it to you, Cobb. Like, this
stuff
goes on.
Is it unnecessary because other people have done that in the past?
Yeah.
It's known.
They're saying, like,
didn't have to give her a misconduct or that third penalty because she was talking to him. As she was jawing, it's like, you know. But the other thing I was thinking is, like, we don't know. We don't hear everything NFL players are saying to the refs. I've sat close enough to the court during a Sonics game to hear what the basketball players are saying to the refs. And, like, it's pretty rowdy. Like, you jaw with the officials. That's part of the game. And, you know, for that being the third penalty, it gave her a full, game? Yeah.
I'm not.
What do you mean by the third penalty?
Here's the deal, though, too, Cop. To your point, it's not, the excuse to me of, like, well, he's just doing his job. Like, that's kind of BS. That's where sometimes I think with, you know, certain law enforcement agencies and stuff, people go, well, I'm just doing my job. And it's like, right, but there's nuances to this. Again, the Holocaust was never illegal, so the Nazis technically didn't break a law in Germany when they gassed all the Jews, right? So I hate that excuse of, like, well, he's there to call penalties, he should be called the penalty. Like, no, this happens all the time. It's let go. He inserted himself into that moment.
Yeah, what I'm not really understanding is, like, where it's for you guys to judge where the separation of what the rules actually are and how they should be enforced. But so,
what's
the three penalties?
My emotions aren't steeped in logic most of the time.
Wait, so was this one? Was this just in this match with this Osaka chick? Was this just all three penalties came in that, or is it like throughout the tournament?
Yeah, all three came in that. The first one was something that she didn't even see, allegedly. Her coach in the stands was like doing a movement that he called for coaching, which is a penalty.
And then what
was he didn't clearly, she didn't even understand that it was a penalty when he talked to her about it. She was even confused. And then when she found out it was actually a penalty, she got pissed and got another penalty because she threw her racket down and broke
and
it.
What was the third
which
one?
I agree with that. The third one was when she was talking to him about it and like jawing. And then she was like, you took a point from me. You're a thief. And then he penalized her for a full game. And Osaka went from like four games to five and they played a six. So that's like a huge penalty that, you know, if you're an official, you're going to, and you make some calls, you know, you're just going to get talked back to a little bit. And I think that's, and she was playing race card and the women, or not the race card, the women's card. Like, men do this sort of, get away with this sort of stuff all the time. And yeah, it was a heated, dramatic thing that just stirred up a lot of emotions. It's the beauty of sports.
So a lot of it was the fallout after the initial call, where because she also had control of getting those other two penalties, and that's the issue, is that people are that they feel like he shouldn't have given the additional two penalties, and by virtue of that, given the game, and then it kind of compromised the game, set, and match.
Yeah, for the most part.
Is that your understanding, Ted?
Yeah, man. He just said it pissed him off. Like, yeah. I don't know, man. I feel like sometimes we explain stuff to you, and then you're like, they're just saying. Well,
this is another sports thing.
Right, it was like the cheer for the team that beat you.
Well, yeah, so that's the thing, is like, I thought it was just like one quick flag and boom, that threw the game, but it's sounding like he made the call, fine. I mean, of course, she could have not gotten pissed, but, you know, she's a high-level athlete, she's going to get pissed. But then what people are upset about is that he then penalized her two more times, and then that shifted.
Now, we never said that.
That's what he just said.
No, the first one.
No. He just said why he was upset about. Like, when you're saying what people, like, I can't tell you what people are upset about. But
you were talking about it changing the game, and one penalty doesn't change the game. Three does, it sounds like.
Right.
But again, we're not talking analytical here. We're talking about nuances of things.
Right.
So this goes on all the time. He inserted himself in.
With the first one.
Right.
But the second one, she broke a racket. I think that's a pretty fair penalty.
Right. And then the third one's on her, right?
The third one, I think with that much at stake in the final of the U.S. Open, you just put on your big boy pants as the umpire and let it slide off you and let the game play out.
I mean, I definitely see what you're saying.
It was a bitch move.
You see judges do this in the courtroom sometimes, too.
There's ego.
Yeah, I think there was some of that on his part.
A smug douchebag with an accent and a sweater and white pants. I just didn't like him.
I hear what you're saying. But she also had a lot of chances to not get the third thing. So three strikes.
No. Dude, trust me. I started this by saying, I love Serena. She handles everything great. Like, she kind of blew
and
up.
She told
and
the
lost
crowd
it.
To stop booing. She had to do it. And she's like, this is her moment. Give it up for this girl. She played great. Like, she was a great sport on the podium. In the heat of the moment, the competition, I would expect the greatest athletes of all times to be assholes in those moments because, they're the greatest competitors in the world.
But her being an asshole caused the third penalty, which shifted the game.
Well, that's like blaming, right? But she wouldn't have been there. That's like saying if somebody murders you, then it's the person's fault who gave birth, or I don't know. All right, you're right. She got the extra two, but that's what we're saying. That's why we're annoyed. He inserted himself into the fucking game that should have never been to that point. Referee that chose to be a part of it and affect it.
Yeah.
I have a lifetime of having an aversion to that.
Right. So you're saying, how sports go. You played college sports. There's certain things that go on. There's hand fighting in football. There's offensive penalties. There's not touching second base in baseball. There's all this stuff that goes on. So I'm saying, you can't just look at it. It's very nuanced kind of stuff.
And I don't understand tennis.
Yeah, I think the key here is that, so Matt has a lifelong hatred of referees. I typically take the opposite. I think I really don't like when people will sit there in a soccer game or a polo game or something and hold up the game screaming at the referee. They're not going to change their call because you're yelling in their face. Not that she did. I'm not even talking about tennis at this point, but they're not going to change their call. And so for me, one, I feel like you always need to play well enough to put it out of the referee's hands. A, if the referee's deciding the game, you didn't win by enough. And B, it just holds up the game and pisses everyone off. They made their call. It's already over. You never see refs get argued to by a player, and then they're like, oh, you know what? Actually, you're right. I was wrong. Let's flip it back. So I think personally,
disagree.
It's on her.
It happens in football all the time.
What do you mean?
With intentional grounding. I saw it three times this weekend. Sometimes with an interference, players start jawing, the sideline jaws, and that flag comes out. And in baseball, it's like an art form. They don't overturn them, but the manager has to go yell at those
people. I agree that they'll influence getting the penalty called. I'm saying they won't influence getting it pulled back. Football may be the exception because we all know, obviously, the NFL has been kind of screwy with all their rules and stuff. But in any other sport, have you ever seen in soccer where they give a PK and then actually, never mind, no PK. Or they give a free kick and they go, actually, never mind, no PK or no free kick because this Italian dude screamed in my face. No, never, ever happens. Never happens. So that's the thing. The third one is on her sportsmanship. Second one, I feel that. That was her moment of anger. But then to do it again, on her.
Right.
Yeah, it's all good if we don't agree.
Yeah, it's fine.
need Jesus.
I just thought
I feel like you were just talking about a completely different point. Right. He was just saying, hey, that ref annoyed me this week. And we were like, yeah, he had served himself.
Any other player, like, that's been there before who's, you know, like, my mom watches a lot of tennis, so I kind of know a little bit. Like, but just it's this, like, young girl's first time. And, yeah, like, exactly. Typical ref behavior. I was very not thrilled to see her moment, like, tainted by all these boos because everyone's there for Serena.
I don't understand that viewpoint at all. Because he didn't insert himself against her. He inserted himself, like, on her side, if anything, but on no side because he's an impartial judge. So for her, it would only really be a travesty had he, like, held it against her that hits her first time or inserted himself in a way that detrimented her. He didn't ruin her moment. Her moment was ruined by the crowd's reaction to Serena's reaction to what he did, and Serena had the chance to control that. So that's where I'm at.
Tomato, tomato.
You can't honestly think judges Serena! don't have a fucking bias.
They do have bias, for sure. But, but she didn't get the point for him having a bias. She got the first of these three strikes for him maybe having a bias or maybe enforcing the rules. We don't know. But the second one, okay, that's on her. She rage quit. The third one, she already had her chance to express that rage.
So if somebody came down the hall right now and said, hey, technically you're not supposed to have drinks in the studio, and threw you out of here and then wanted to charge you with something, you'd be fine with that.
Well, the thing is, if they knocked on the window and they said, hey, you can't have drinks in there, and then I'm like, F you, two warnings. But then the third one, that's on me. Because this is a three-strike scenario we're talking about. We're not talking about he just said he can't coach you and all of a sudden he threw a game to
It's good to have a friend that can show you different perspectives of things. And it's helped me a lot of times in my life.
Look, here's what I'll say, Ted. You're smart and I'm right. So eventually you'll agree with me.
Oh, man. All right.
That's a great line. That's my biggest takeaway from all that arguing.
Yeah, I mean, I it's like, where the fuck were we even talking
about? I'm going to use that line.
I don't know.
That's all Jesus. I mean.
I finally got a passport.
Oh, yeah, dude, you sent me that photo.
I got it yesterday. Yeah, dude, I'm pretty pumped about that.
Yeah, it's got that little chip in it, too. A lot of people freak out and they put it in the microwave.
Oh, I didn't even know.
It's got that little, do you see the, they all do now, but it's got that little image on the front. It's, I believe it's an RFID chip. What's the one that's only activated by, like, when it's in close proximity to something?
I don't know. RFID, they, like, bad people can use that and run by and pick your stuff up, apparently. Or someone exploited fear to sell RFID blocking stuff.
Dude, also, another cool thing, if you look on it, Ted, when you open it up when you get home, if you look on the line you wrote your name on, if you look really closely, it says name. It's not a blue line.
Huh.
Cool little security thing on it.
Huh. I just think it's wild to get one.
Yeah, it's dope.
But I also found out the bad way. I talked to a buddy last night that lives in Colombia. So I'm thinking about going down to see him in the spring. And we were talking about going to Brazil. And he was like, you need more than just a passport. I was like, what? He goes, yeah, man, you need like a travel visa.
Yeah, visa.
And I was like, damn. He's like, yeah, it's not that hard. You just got to do it. And I was like, all right. There's a whole new world. I didn't even know. Like, I thought with the passport, I could just go places.
With the Japanese and the Singapore passports, you pretty much can go wherever. They're like a all-access VIP pass to the world because they're such pleasant tourists. But yeah, for the U.S., like even like Thailand, or I mean, no, sorry, Vietnam, like we had to go and like apply. You apply to the consulate and get like visas, like stickers sent in the mail that say you're okay and stuff. Like, yeah.
How do you apply? Like, what do they talk to you? Do they question you?
Yeah, I had to go into like this weird Vietnamese travel agency in Chinatown here, and like it's kind of bizarre. But most of them, you don't have to apply. I think Bermuda I had to apply, and where else? There's been a few weird ones. Cambodia, you can walk right in. It's just ones where you have like Australia. I had to apply. You get like a work visa, but it's
what are they worried you're gonna stay?
No, it's really Well, it's really just about documenting your entry so they can document your exit. So they know at a certain point, once your visa has lapsed, like, hey, we'll give you a 6-month pass. So when that 6 months comes up, if you're still in the country and they happen to pull you over a traffic stop or whatever, like, you're getting kicked out.
And they just kick you out? They don't put you in their jail?
Well, I mean, it depends on what you did wrong.
But what,
they have options. They have a lot of options.
Okay.
But yeah, generally speaking, they want more money in than is flowing out, and they want to restrict the movement of illegal substances. So let's say, for instance, you're in Australia on an investor's visa. You show you have a certain amount in your bank account. You're going to be sitting there not working, spending money, fueling their economy. That's good. Come on into the country for a year. Have a great time. Go spend all your money because it goes into our economy. Now, the other thing is you come in and you're like, yeah, I'm going to come in and work and whatever. Well, okay, so you have no money and you're going to take jobs from our local people. No thanks, you know?
Right.
So that's generally the idea of visas.
Yeah, that's what my buddy was telling me last night. He was telling me about a couple countries where, like, if you invest in just, like, $5,000, like, it proves to them that you're there to stay for a while. Mm-hmm. And then with, like, a year or two, you can get citizenship.
EU right now. Well, you can even do that in the States, actually. But EU right now, if you buy a property that's over, like, 250 grand, I think, in Spain or Portugal, EU passport. One of my friends literally flew out to Portugal today to try to do that.
Yeah.
But that's, actually, you know him, too. My buddy Andy.
That's still 250. Talk about 5 G's.
Yeah, I know.
And 5 G's in the U.S.,
I think it's 500 for family or for an individual, and like a million plus creating 10 jobs for family. Somebody can check me on that. I don't know, but
500 G's?
500 G's. G'd up from the feet up.
Damn.
A lot of Chinese are doing it.
That's insane.
Yeah. Dude, I know, man. Well, they got that, like, you know, fall of communism money, like some of those Russian oligarchs.
Yeah, I just didn't realize it cost that much.
Well, yeah, I mean, it, you know, like anything, it depends.
I didn't realize it, but I'm not, like, super surprised to hear it.
Dude, so Ted, have you been out of the country before?
No. Nice. I've never left the 48.
Dude, that's...
I've never been to Canada or, like... I've never left the 48 contiguous.
Dude, that's pretty exciting, man. You got so much cool stuff to check out. Dude, and you would love traveling, too. Like, of all people, I'm actually kind of surprised you haven't, because I feel like you'd thrive out there. Where, if you could go anywhere right now, warp whistle, doo-doo-doo-doo-doo, and transport... What's on your mind? You're there for an hour.
Germany.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. I want to go to Amsterdam. I think London's a nice little, like, quick, like, kind of dip my toe in.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And then, yeah, me and my buddy Drago have talked about going to Germany.
That'd be tight.
Part of Europe. But then actually talking to my
Bundesliga.
Buddy. And he was down there in Colombia. So he was talking about coming down there and going to see the beaches and stuff. I was like, that sounds awesome. Because he was like, Bogota is great, but he's like, it's so crowded here. You have no idea. And he's like, basically, you'll just see the city. You won't see anything else.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I went to, what's that little city on the northern part of Colombia? I can't think of the name of it. And like, Colombia is nice, but that's you're in a real foreign land. Versus like some countries, you're like kind of in like a pseudo America.
Yeah. You
know? Like London?
Yeah, yeah. But that's a good starting point.
That's what I'm
saying.
Yeah, I've
London's
never
been to
London. The first place I went to, and it was awesome. You just like... As soon as you told me that, I was just like, dude, you're going to love riding the subways and all the signs that say mind the gap. And then like it's just so fun and pleasant and jolly. And, you know, everybody has accents. And, yeah, it's just amazing.
Cartagena. You thrive in Mexico, too. I feel like that's a good first jaunt for you because it's, like, kind of foreign but also, like, kind of, you know, westernized.
I thought for a while about going to Puerto Rico, number one, because it's, like, still America.
Yeah, U.S. territory.
Right. But, you know, you still use American money. You don't need a passport. And then, you know, it's pretty half and half on language, right?
Yeah, so, I don't know. I haven't been. So I got to imagine.
Oh. Yeah. I was like, Puerto Rico might not be bad. But now that I have a buddy in Colombia, I'm like, I got to go to Colombia.
I want to go to Costa Rica.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Have you been there?
Yeah.
Okay.
I would say, honestly, man, you're an operator. I think, like, as long as you didn't get worried, like, you'd be fine almost anywhere. There's a few countries where I feel like it would get, like, sketchy enough that you're, or, like, tough enough to navigate, like when everything's written in Cyrillics, you're just like, I can't, like, all right. But I would say, like, probably 90% of countries you'd thrive in.
Yeah, I had a buddy that just went to Morocco.
Oh, there's a city really close to there, Chefchaouen or something like that.
He went to like the main place, and he was just like, it's insane. I mean, you kind of forget that, like, how you know, most of the Muslim countries are like, there's just not women. And he was like, it was weird. He went to watch the World Cup, and he's like, there's just like 40 dudes sitting there, but there's not like a woman. I was like, that is super strange.
That is bizarre. Are they just not allowed in public life? Dude, check that out. That's Chefchaouen. Everything's blue.
Oh.
Beautiful, beautiful blue. It's near Morocco. That's a place I'd like to go. Matt, can you see?
Yeah.
So he was also telling me, too, with just like how they hustle down there. And he was like, I was like, what do you, and he was like, dude, like, you got to keep your head like on a switch. Because he's like,
gotta go hard.
everything looks the same. And he goes, some people send you the wrong direction. He's like, they're not trying to rob you, but he's like, they definitely want to like want you to buy shit.
Oh, yeah.
And then he was telling me like some of the snakes and stuff. He's like, if you're not careful, they'll just put it on you. And be like, all right, tip.
Dude, that's part of what's, I mean, yeah, I'm with him, dude. And there's little scams and hustles and stuff everywhere you go. I mean, I usually, honestly, when I get scared, like I keep my, the big thing is hold on to your debit card and your passport. Those two you can get pretty much anywhere. So honestly, sometimes I'll keep those like in the front side of my underwear. But typically, like as long as you're paying attention, you don't have your stuff all hanging out, like you'll be good. But the hustles and stuff is almost part of the fun thing of traveling, you know, like just interacting with people and they're like trying to do whatever. And like, especially if you're in like a country that's not that wealthy, it's like $4, $6 to buy like whatever their little thing is, or lose your money at like, you know, three card Monty or something. Like, it's fun to just engage with the craziness of the earth, you know, like all things on balance, you know, at the end of your trip, you're down $50. I mean, this is not like going down dark alleys and getting robbed. You know, obviously there's some countries where you have to carry a knife and whatever, but you know, I like personally the hustle, but it's a little intense. Like one of the, you know, the first couple times I've heard India is really bad for that. That people are just, no matter what, like you stop the car and people are just running up to your window, like trying to get money. And that would annoy me, but I like the occasional, like, you know, like a fake Buddhist dude who hands you a little card and is like, oh, praying for you. And then it's like, oh, that's $2. Like, psh, man, get out of here.
Yeah. That guy's gotten me before.
Yeah, they have one in Seattle right by Pike Place now.
Yeah, yeah. That's where the guy got me.
Yeah. Did you pay him?
Yeah.
Oh, no, come on. I handed it back. I'm like, man, get out of here. Move along, Buddha.
There's a magician that like did a trick, and then when he asked for money, and I was like, I don't have any money. He said, well, I do take Venmo. And I was like, God damn it. All right. All right, you got me. Yeah, so Venmo'd him $5. Like, good on you, man.
Yeah. Yeah, Ted, man, there's just a whole wild, wild, wonderful world. And you're so high in personality trait openness that you would just love it, man. It's just an adventure for you.
The one that does scare me is Russia. I heard you ain't supposed to smile much, and I smile way too much.
Russia scares me, too. I've always said I would only go to Russia with either my buddy Daniel or my buddy George, because they both speak fluent Russian. But I would want somebody with me who spoke the language, because there's just some shady, shady parts from what I hear. And, like, there's just also, not to categorize a whole country, but there's some people there who are just after your money, like straight criminal status.
Well, and the other thing I got to be careful with in Colombia, like my buddy was like, he was like, the women are beautiful.
Oh my God, yeah.
And I was like, don't.
Sorry.
I was like,
good looking.
Yeah, he was like, you got to be careful, man. I was like, you got to keep an eye on me. He's like, I will, and be careful. He was like, just because some girls talk, he goes, we're not going to go to the bars where the expats hang out, so they won't try to hustle you there. But he's like, yeah, and he's like, people are going to like you. Like, you need to, like,
they will
love you. Don't have a couple drinks and be like, dude, I'm in love. It's dude,
yeah, I told you in...
Keep in mind, my buddy's marrying a Venezuela Instagram model.
Oh, Jesus. Ooh.
Yeah.
You go to that wedding. In fact, did you invite me to that wedding? Was that the one you were talking about? I'm in. I missed out on one Venezuelan wedding. Never again. This guy I went to school with had his wedding on an island with 800 people. I couldn't go. Dude, but yeah, in Cartagena, Colombia, we went to a nightclub and there's beautiful women everywhere, right? And, you know, we're like just flirting with them, having a good time. We think we're cool. Go outside, grab it. So on the street, the guys have like these little wagons you can buy beer from them, like a little radio flyer type wagon. Right. Bought a beer, sitting there drinking with them. He's like, yeah, see anything you like, whatever. I'm just like laughing, joking with him. And he's like, yeah, they're all working. And I'm like, what do you mean? I was like, the patrons are working? He's like, working girls, all of them. And I was just like, and it's like, dude, yeah, they were literally all prostitutes, all escorts, the whole bar, every girl in there.
I was joking around too. I was like, dude, if we went to a beach town, do you think it would be hard to find weed? And he goes, the hard part is
the weed will find you.
Yeah,
Ted.
He goes, it's the other stuff. And I go, what do you mean? He told me a story about, God, what was he buying? Something random. It wasn't like food or it was like something on a street cart, maybe like a drink or whatever. The guy's like, yeah, I don't have any, or like something. And then he said the guy like ran down the list of like, you know, like coca, weed,
dude,
girls. Like,
dude, what? Dude, that's what I've always said. So the tuk-tuk drivers in Thailand, it's like they have a decision tree. And they have 35 things. They start at the top in the middle. And they have 35 things at the bottom that they can get their hands on for you. But they want to see what kind of a person you are. So at first they're like, you know, as you're driving, like, you guys want booze, girls? Booze, girls? And that's the first, you know, first fork, right? And you're like, maybe booze? No, man, no booze. And he's like, oh, cocaine? No? Cocaine, weed. You like weeds? And you're like, no, man, no cocaine or weed. And he's like, oh, okay. Ping pong show. Ping pong. You're like, ping pong show. I'm like, what? Like, well, I don't know. What is the ping pong show? And he's like, oh, lots of girls. Come on. Da-da-da. And they just like, they go down this list, dude, and like, they are going to sell you something and it's not going to be legal.
That's what he was saying. He was like, dude, he goes, just if you buy weed, he goes, then everybody will be hitting you up.
Yeah. And we did go do, well, yeah. He sold me something. That's all I'm going to say.
Oh, I would have been screwed.
Yeah. They're going to love you.
Weed, girls? I'll take it all.
Here's the thing. Just set the money aside now and be like, look, that money's gone. They're going to hustle it out of me. Okay? Yeah. And I'm going to have a good time.
All right. Trust me. Europe will be my first one. That trip coming up here in just a month when I go see Seattle Seahawks. I also think it's a very Ted Smith trip. Finally go to London. See soccer? No, I'm going to see American football.
Oh, dude, you're going to London for the Seahawks?
Yeah.
That'll be tight. Oh, is that where you got the pass? Okay. It all makes sense now.
I'm going with a mutual friend of ours.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah. Powerful Ted Smith.
Cobb, I see you looking at him. We got some emails?
We do. I just screwed myself up with my system here. Okay. Yep. Why did that not? Wait, what? Okay. Yeah. My little sorting system totally failed me in the moment of truth. Hey, fellas. Shout out to the greatest podcast in all the land.
All the land.
For another great summer of podcasting. Ted's story of photobombing Gavin Rosdale reminded me of Red Fest a few years back. My girlfriend wanted a picture at the event, so she asked the nearest person to take the picture. He drunkenly said, yeah, of course I'll take a picture with you. That man, Mike Hawk. That picture hangs proudly on our wall to this day. Best regards, Noble.
That's pretty funny.
Oh, dude, that's awesome. Awesome. Did I somehow... delete that? Dude, give me a second.
No worries. I was like, yeah, look over there. Everything looks highlighted.
Yeah, well, usually I go through. I'm missing one email here. Greetings to the greatest podcast in all the land.
All the land.
I was listening to this week's fantastic episode of the podcast and came up with the concept below based on annual podcast conversations. Seasons of the podcast. January to March, the Sadcast. Mid-June to August, the Boys of Meltdown. September to December, dip season. You guys need to fill in April to mid-June.
Huh. That's a good call.
I would say, yeah.
We're also on week two of Apple Talk, which is pretty...
Yeah, Apple Talk's
back. You can
back
set strong. Your calendar to that one.
That's true, because dip season doesn't really officially begin. I mean, I'm not the purveyor, but I feel like around like Thanksgiving. Or is it coming out a little sooner?
Now, usually, well...
A little tailgate?
We start getting excited for dip around now.
Well, see, that's the thing is I think there's a little bit of lag time because, like, mid-June, you know, we're already talking about being the bad boys of summer this year. Yeah. It's coming, you know? And so I feel like... What do you think? When's the official start of dip season? That's what we really need to know.
I'd say November.
November? Okay. Yeah. So then September, we got to figure out. And, you know, April to mid-June.
September just depends on the weather. I mean, look, it's been chilly here, but it's still summer extended. Like, I was swimming in Lake Washington last weekend.
Apples and hoodies.
Apples and hoodies.
Apples, hoodies, tailgates. I'm with you. Possibly sailgating.
Oh.
Don't let the dream die.
With all that said, I'm pretty sure in a couple weeks, we can sailgate on that boat.
I like the way you're talking about it.
And it is dope.
Wait, on which boat?
The boat we were talking about sailgating on,
or the boat we were talking about before the cast?
The boat we were talking about before the cast.
Ooh, Ted Smith.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Woo-hoo-hoo. Okay, don't do it to me. Not super fleshed out, but I thought I would share. Please modify as you see fit and keep up the good work. Cop topic, do you believe in luck? If so, do you have a lucky omen? I am a huge believer in luck, both good and bad. When people in my life ask, what am I doing wrong? I immediately think of the line from the Serenity Prayer, accept the things I cannot change, because there are just some things in life we have zero control over. Call it luck, karma, whatever. It's a heck of a lot easier for me to take life on life's terms and work with what comes. A lot less stressful that way. Sincerely, Ross W., Linwood, Washington.
Smart.
Yeah.
I would also say letting go of control can be very helpful. I feel like throughout most of my life, control has been very important to me. And sometimes it's nice when you just release that and you're like, look, I'm just dust in the wind at that point. And it kind of goes along with, you know, that email. Yeah, there was one more, but now I can't track it down. It's on you guys.
I thought people are always trying to say, be like water.
Yeah, dude, that's that famous Bruce Lee quote.
Yeah.
Is that not the same thing?
That's what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
You're just like, yeah. I was like, I thought they always said be like water. Yeah.
What is the quote? Something about persistence?
You put water in the cup, it becomes the cup. That whole one? Be like water. Water can flow or it can crash. You put water in the cup, it becomes the cup. You put water in the teapot, it becomes the teapot.
Okay, there's something about like a river doing something not because of its one thing, but because of its persistence. Something about smoothing rocks or something.
Oh, river cutting through rock?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if that's Bruce Lee or not.
Okay, I thought that's where we're going with that, but water's cool stuff.
Water's great.
Well, yeah, and it's so metaphorical. Like we were talking about with the just rivers in general when you were talking about it.
Yeah.
I've now heard that in so many different songs. Dang it, there's one line I'm thinking of that I definitely cannot remember from. I can't just spit it on command, but yeah, it's about rivers just sort of refreshing and re-energizing and new beginnings and life being a river and things always sort of changing, you know?
Yeah. Always forward.
And the big thing, don't ever go chasing waterfalls.
Hey, what's good? What's mad?
Before we get to what's mad,
hey, what's good? What's mad?
Check out what's mad.
Hey, what's good? What's maddening?
Before we get to what's maddening,
hey, what's good? What's maddening?
Check out what's maddening.
Well, besides watching the U.S. Open, this weekend I spent most of it at Vigor Ground Fitness out in Renton, learning all about pain-free performance from Dr. John Russin, and just had an awesome time. It was really... It was funny because, like, we spent 8 hours on the first day on something, on, like, deep diving into a warm-up that should take about 8 minutes when it's all said and done. So it was a lot of stuff. It was pretty intense, but, like, it was fun to you know, absorb as much as I can and then, like, process it as best I can so that I can put it into action with my clients, which is, you know, that's the name of the game with these things. You can't do everything the exact way, like, but... I feel like I'm getting better at going to these events and taking the right sorts of notes. And shout out to John's wife, Lindsay, for letting us know in the email that she was going to send us all the slides so that I wasn't trying to, like, frantically copy down everything that made it up there. So, yeah, it was an exhausting weekend of learning that kind of threw my sleep schedule through the ringer. And, you know, that just, like... I could feel myself mentally early this week, like, just kind of being like, oh, man, yeah, I went hard this weekend on, like, using my brain to learn and absorb information. It was good. So that was most of the weekend and had a great time, like, because everyone else that's there is like me. We're super stoked to be learning about this thing that we do for our jobs on a weekend, like, to spend 2 days sitting 8 hours each day on a weekend, on kickoff weekend, sitting there trying to absorb as much as we can from one of the best in the game. Like, so everybody's super cool and fired up and met a bunch of awesome, you know, great trainers from all over. People were in from Alaska and Wisconsin and just all over the place. So, yeah, it was a lot of fun. Saturday night after that, I got what?
That's just a long day.
Right?
Yeah.
2 days of that.
Yeah.
Saturday and Sunday. But it was totally worth it. Had a great time. I'm really glad that Luca, who runs Vigor Ground Fitness, always has awesome top-level talent coming in and teaching us at that facility. Like, yeah, it's just awesome to have that in my backyard. So that was fun. Saturday night, dude, I had the f***ing best jet ski ride with my dad. Like, sun was setting, and he's like, you want to go for it? And I was like, sure. And it's late enough in the summer, we saw one boat in like 15 minutes, just up and down the lake. And it was, I mean, the sunset was going and like we just had the whole thing to ourselves. It was nuts.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
It got pinned.
Did you pin it?
Well, somebody had to say it.
Yeah. And he literally when we stopped, because he doesn't ride like that a lot. And he's like, how fast did you get it up to? Did you get above 60? And I was like, yes. Like,
oh my God. You were going above 60?
Yeah.
Dude, that's so fast on a jet ski.
Yeah, I hit 68. After you said that, because I wasn't really trying. I was like, usually I can find times to really pin it and hit 60 when I'm riding out there at the times I ride. But with this, it was like I was able to go super fast and make these huge turns all around the lake. But doing that at 45, like, you just don't get to do that when it's crowded out there because it takes up so much space. And you're just winding, but you're just carving at that speed. It was just so much fun. And that's, you know, some straight shots. But, yeah, we were just out there. You know, it just was really, really did. I really felt like I was soaking it all up. I felt like I was, you know, it's like, man, cool. I'm getting everything that I'm supposed to out of this moment. And yeah, it was awesome. And then, I went down to Issaquah for dinner and then watched the U.S. Open. And that was pretty much it. And then Sunday, I was up all night until I had to come here. Like, the event went late. And then I was just like, well, not sleeping now, because they had another guy, Joel Jameson, came in, and John and Luca and Joel all gave like an hour and a half of like business Q&A. So it was just like, oh, great. An extra hour and a half of knowledge bombs to keep me occupied. So worked hard, but had a great time. And that was it.
Dude, nice. That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Not quite. Think,
wait for it.
Maybe it's about that time.
Boop, doop, doop, boop, boop. Cobb topic.
Nice, boys. Oh. I wasn't expecting that.
Bonus.
Take it.
No.
Aggressive with the bell.
Damn it, Ted. I'm sorry. So a couple weeks ago when we walked out of here, Matt was talking about there's an Art Deco building across the kitty corner from this building in downtown Seattle. And it's got some interesting tile work that a lot of people really like. Personally, not my style, but Matt really likes it. And, you know, I know it's generally revered as a pretty cool building. When I was walking over here, currently, if people are familiar with the Rainier Tower, it's that building that looks like it's about to fall over. It's got the curved bottom that sort of curves up and out, and then a more traditional top. I don't know how you'd describe that. But
weird.
Yeah. It's not traditional for sure. Like the bottom curves, for people who aren't from the area, it's almost like how would you describe the bottom of that building, Ted?
It's almost like a top.
Yeah, it's like a wave.
A spinning top, because the bottom of the building is kind of thin, and then it opens
rounds
up.
Rounds up, dude, and the building goes up.
Right. Yeah. Perfect. So the bottom of the building is much smaller than the rest of the building. So it kind of sits on a really narrow base. So anyway, I saw they have the area around it excavated because they're building a new building, and I saw some people admiring it. And I was like, yeah, I love that building, and you can really see it right now. And earlier in the day, I'd been in a conversation about a new building in downtown Seattle that's sort of this glass skyscraper that looks a lot different than some of the other buildings in the city. So anyway, I was thinking just about architecture in general, about, you know, how buildings and the materials they use represent the area they're from, et cetera, et cetera. And so the Cobb topic this week, and also how being in different buildings and spaces affects how you feel. And so the Cobb topic this week, what's your favorite building and why? And I'm seriously very interested to hear people's answers. So email us.
Favorite building.
What's your favorite building? It can be your favorite building to look at. It can be your favorite building to be in. It can be just your favorite building that exists. It can have a good memory, whatever. Just, you know, or just an objectively beautiful structure. Or the story behind the building, too. Sometimes they're ugly buildings, but they have a cool story.
I mean, my first instinct would just be seeing a sporting event at Madison Square Garden.
Oh, yeah. MSG I thought that storied.
Was, right? MSG has so much history, like, besides just basketball and hockey that's played there, but then all the NFL drafts that were there, the boxing events that used to go on there, the concerts that go on at MSG. So to me, seeing a sporting event at MSG, I thought was one of the cooler buildings I've ever been in.
Yeah, I feel that for sure.
And I'm trying to think of just like a design of building that sticks out to me.
Yeah, because MSG has had so many iconic events, you know, like the structure itself from the outside, it's like, oh, okay, you know,
right.
Nothing too exciting, but yeah, you're right. That's the thing, the history affects, you know, the building.
Yeah, most of mine would probably be sports related.
That's cool.
I don't know.
I bet the Big House was cool in Michigan.
The Big House was, that one was cool. That was cool seeing that. I think seeing LSU stadium and like 104,000 people and like how it's built into like the old dorms on top of it. And like when you're growing up like one side of it, I mean, it looks like a dorm's like in the building.
Dude,
so I like some of that crazy stuff.
Ohio University, not Ohio State, their dorms are in their basketball court.
Yeah.
Very bizarre.
Yeah, some of that stuff to me is like freaking insane.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if I have a desire to see a game at Jerry's World, but I'd like to go see that stadium because it just looks so futuristic. Like, I'm pumped that I'm going to go see the Seahawks play at Wembley. Like, originally they're supposed to play at Tottenham's new stadium, which I'm happy they're not. It's Tottenham.
Yeah.
But going to Wembley, like, Wembley's freaking so
legendary,
famous.
Yeah.
Yeah, if nothing else, just for concerts.
Yeah, definitely.
I would, once you said that, my mind immediately went back to the Great Western Forum because I had so many good memories growing up going to Kings games. And even Lakers games, although we went to more Lakers games when Luke got older because he was more into basketball. I was such a hockey guy. We went to more Lakers games at Staples, and that's like seeing Kobe and Shaq win their first title together was like definitely the most memorable Lakers memory for me, and that was at Staples. And Staples was a lot of fun when it opened, but like the Forum was just where I fell in love with the Kings and Gretzky, and I saw Gretzky break Gordie Howe's record for the most goals ever. And yeah, that just had a lot of history in it. Although I didn't get to see all the Lakers history, like I was there for, you know, until this new Kings team that started winning cups. That was our golden era. So yeah, the Forum's up there, and like just from an exterior standpoint, like there are so many awesome things in Amsterdam, but the Rijksmuseum really stands out. Even though I had more fun in the Van Gogh Museum, Rijksmuseum was awesome too. But yeah, we had, I'd say that just the way that building looked was just like, we were staying in the museum quarter, so we just kept walking by it every time we'd get off the bus, and I was like, God damn, I can't stop looking at it. It's got the I Am Amsterdam sign out front of it and everything, so.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think in Seattle, I'd put the Moore on there.
Ooh.
The Moore's cool. The Moore was the first of its kind, too. Like, yeah. So the Moore has apartments in there, has a hotel, and has, like, you know, some mixed-use retail and stuff above, and then also the theater, and that really was Harbinger, is that the word? No, I don't know. Like that now is how almost all buildings are built, mixed use.
Yeah,
set the precedent.
But it was, yeah. I don't know that it was the first, but it was definitely like a very early version of that, which is cool. For me, I would probably say I'm torn because there's a lot of cool buildings, but I think ultimately the observatory that's in LA that sits up on that hill is up there. But I don't think it's
Griffith
my top.
Griffith
Observatory is really cool. I don't know that it's my top dog. There's a lot of cool structures in D.C. I'm surprised you didn't mention the Chocolate City for all the stuff on the mall. There's some really cool architecture. I think ultimately, though, I got to hand it to, Chicago has a ton of cool architecture. I didn't even think of that. But ultimately, I would say my favorite space is in Melbourne. They're at the forefront of, they get a lot of that Asian influence on their architecture. They have really cool futuristic buildings, but the tallest building downtown has a sky deck, and I bought us annual passes, so you can just go up there for free. But the cool thing is, in some parts of Australia, they don't mark up beer when you're at cool places, so you could go up there, and Heineken's were $2. So we would just, boom, like hop on an elevator, shoot to the top of this giant building, true floor-to-ceiling windows. And it's observatory is the highest, highest deck like in the Southern Hemisphere. And just look out and you can see for miles in every direction the whole beautiful city below you. And that was just like our local beer spot. So I think that's it for me.
And I should mention, like in D.C., I don't know in Adams Morgan if this bar is even open anymore. But this would be one called Reef Bar, right? So the top of it, they had like a rooftop deck. So summertime obviously was awesome. But in the wintertime, they had like a spiked apple cider they served up there with like Captain Morgan in it and stuff. But you're basically on like a row house roof. But when you look down, it was just the Capitol. So like you're right. I forget about that stuff. And then the other one I loved in D.C. was the not the Lincoln, the Jefferson Memorial, just on the other side of the Potomac.
And I know the Lincoln. I don't know what's the Jefferson one.
So the Jefferson Memorial, like as you're in D.C., I think you go, is it the 14th Street Bridge? You go across one of the bridges. So technically you're in Northern Virginia, but it's sitting right there on the water, and like, the Lincoln Memorial kind of looks out this way, whereas like the Jefferson's way over here, and it looks back into like everything. You could see like you know, you could see all the monuments. I think you could see Watergate from there.
That's
like
cool.
It's pretty cool, okay. And it's like not as well known. Like everybody goes to the Lincoln one,
right? Yeah,
yeah,
yeah, dude. You would
that's good.
You
to
would
know.
Pick a like slightly off the tourist path spot.
No, you don't want to be f***ing with Lincoln. Go to that Jefferson.
Well, you're like, I got my passport. Like, yeah, first country, Colombia. It's like, God damn, dude.
It's aggressive, right? All right. I forgot to mention this. I think I have a work thing for a men's room next week, so I don't know if I'm going to be able to do one. So we might take a week off. I got to see, Matt, I know you got a busy weekend with a wedding.
Yeah.
So we're not going to have time to film. But either way, I'm just saying, heads up, we may or may not be here next week.
Plan it fast and loose, usual.
Yeah, per usual. I'll probably be on an awesome date. All right, there you go. This episode 233 for MCTP, for Cobb. I'm E. Ted Smith. This is the podcast. Cheers.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer.
When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
With Ring cameras, you can protect your home from anywhere. You're at baggage claim, and you get a motion alert. Check live view and see a guy looking in your car window. Luckily, you've got floodlight cam. So you press the siren button and let 105 decibels do the rest. Problem solved. Home protected. Bag on its way. With Ring, you can protect your home from anywhere. Learn more at ring.com.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.